Welcome to Sustainable Sessions, hosted by yours truly, Lucas and Lauren. Episode 20, featuring Jesse Vermeer.
My name's Jesse Vermeer, and I'm a professor at Carleton University in Ottawa. And I'm a professor of environmental science and geography and environmental studies. And my work mainly focuses on freshwater ecosystems, and that's sort of how I got into the question of plastic pollution. So that's sort of what my research area is. So I'm a professor at Carleton, and I'm interested in how humans are impacting freshwater ecosystems.
Nice. So out of like the whole broadness of climate change, obviously there's so many different topics. Like, why did you decide to gravitate towards that particular niche of the climate change problem? And do you have like throughout your journey, how did you kind of arrive to that? Like, did you start with that immediately, or did you kind of work towards it as you kind of
learned about the problem and stuff?
Yeah, it's sort of a new area of work for me. So within the last 5 years, so mainly what I've been doing research on is mainly on algae and aquatic plants and how humans are changing water quality. And then, you know, it was about 5 years ago that I started just personally like reading more about plastic pollution in marine systems, because a lot of that research has been going on longer. And then there was a study by the Five Gyres Institute, so an NGO, and they did a voyage through the Great Lakes, and they showed that there's plastic pollution in the Great Lakes as well. So that got me interested in sort of thinking about that in other freshwater systems in Canada. So that's sort of how I got into it. Most of my, the other part of my research, as I said, is more on algae and metal contamination of lakes.
Awesome. I guess kind of just like honing a little bit more on your research, I don't know if you want to talk about like maybe a specific test that you've done, or like kind of go a little bit more into the algae stuff, because I feel like that's really interesting.
Yeah, so a specific test with what I, so with the algae stuff, mainly what I do or and you know continued to do, but take sediment cores from lakes, and it's like you can go back in time and you can see what was living basically in the past, and from that we can get an idea of how lakes have changed through time as a result of human activities or natural phenomena as well. So that's sort of a big part of my research as well, because in a lot of cases we don't know, you know, we suspect humans have changed different lake ecosystems, but we don't have good monitoring data for it, because a lot of environmental monitoring started in the late 90s, really, and still in a lot of lakes we don't have good observational data. So we have to use these other tools available to sort of reconstruct what changes occurred in the environment. And the main way that I do that, and students in my lab do that, is look at diatoms, which are single-celled algae, and their cell walls are made of glass, and they preserve really well in sediment cores, and there's hundreds of different species. So by looking at how the diatom community changes through time, it gives you an indication of how humans have altered the nutrients of a lake, for example, or how climate warming is changing basically the lake ecosystem with longer ice-free periods and greater length and strength of thermal stratification in lakes. So that's sort of the other part of the research, my research program. The plastic work that I've been doing is fairly simple in comparison, because we're still at the stage of basically trying to figure out where plastic pollution is occurring in lakes and rivers, and what the concentration is of plastic pollution. Where is it coming from, and where is it ending up in lakes and rivers? Is it mostly being transported out to the ocean, or is it ending up in the sediment, for example? So that's the work that we're doing now on plastic pollution. So it's pretty, you know, basic and straightforward work to try and answer some of these simple questions about, you know, how much plastic is there and where is it ending up and what organisms might be exposed to it.
So interesting. Yeah. And to even dive a little bit deeper on specifically the plastic, like microplastics have been just a really hot topic in the climate change community. And it's something that we definitely know has infected our food chain. So a lot of people that choose to eat a lot of fresh fish are going to be exposed to microplastics through this process. Is that at all come up kind of like through your research and what you've read on the topic? And can you touch a little bit on that as well?
Yeah. So I haven't personally done any work on fish, but I always get asked about fish because that's what people, when you talk about plastic in the river, like the first thing people want to know is, are fish consuming it? And there's definitely papers out there showing that they will consume it. I have done work on other animals in collaboration with scientists at Environment Canada. So we've looked at seal stomachs because from the Arctic, Canadian Arctic, because seals are an important food source up there for the people. And they were looking at other contaminants. So we were sent the stomachs by hunters in Nunavut. And we were looking for slightly bigger size plastics than microplastics. So about 1 millimeter and up. But we didn't find, you know, luckily, any plastic at all in about 120 different seal stomachs that we dissected. So that was sort of a good news story. We have a project ongoing that's been slowed by COVID where we're going to look for smaller plastics in about 20 seal stomachs, just to get an idea as well. But people are definitely interested in that aspect of it. So we know there's microplastics in the environment, and there's definitely studies showing it does get into food webs, including foods that humans would eat. So how much is there? And then what, if any, impact that's having is an area that people are definitely interested in.
Just to kind of go back in terms of like the monitoring, I actually just took an environmental studies course and we talked a lot about the environmental impact assessment. Do you think that that's something that's going to need to be coming like more forward now that, I don't know, if there's more projects or more infrastructure projects coming into place, like, do you think we're going to have to include more of these environmental impact assessments? I'm not sure if you know anything about that topic, but maybe if you want to kind of touch on the monitoring aspect or how we can solve this
problem. Yeah, well, okay, so I don't know a ton about that topic, but I do know that monitoring microplastics concentrations is something that governments are working towards, and I'm aware of one that's taking place with the Arctic Council, so Arctic nations, and working to develop protocols for monitoring microplastics in the Arctic. And there's also other groups doing that as well. So I think that's something that needs to be done is we need to develop the right methods to essentially monitor microplastics in the environment. We know that they're doing harm to certain organisms in the environment. There's still a lot of unknowns there, but it's better, I think, to start building those monitoring programs now so we can, because a lot of policies are coming in place now to help reduce plastics, so to measure how effective those policies are, we need to have that monitoring data to see, you know, when we start taking these actions, is plastic pollution declining as we hope? Maybe activities or industries lead to greater plastic pollution, then what can also be done to sort of clean that up? So I think monitoring is an important part of the solution. Yeah.
Awesome. And just to backtrack a little bit too, if you can just touch on a little bit on like kind of how you even became a professor and what that whole experience is like and why you wanted to kind of get into the courses that you are teaching now. And if you could even build on that a little bit to talk about what your experience has been like teaching to students on these topics. Like, have you found that they've like been a lot more interested in certain topics when you're teaching it, and do they have like areas that they like to focus on a lot?
Yep. Yeah. So my experience in becoming a professor, essentially, it was sort of, I think, like a lot of people's paths, a bit unplanned, you know, and I just followed things that were of interest to me. There was no grand plan in it all, but I did a biology undergraduate degree. I was always interested in the environment. You know, as a kid, I belonged to a young naturalist club. And so I did a biology degree because that's what I was interested in. And then I worked for a year after my undergraduate degree and decided I wanted to go back and do my master's. And in doing that, I sort of got more interested in, that's where I started getting more into that sediment core work and looking at longer term climate change and how vegetation responds to that. And then in doing the master's research, I found out I really like doing research. So I decided to do a PhD, and I became more interested in just lake ecosystems because that was a part of my master's, but wasn't the focus. So I decided to do that more for my PhD research. And that's when I started focusing more on algae and aquatic plants and how humans are, human actions are sort of modifying aquatic ecosystems. So that was sort of my educational path. And then I was lucky enough to get a job at a university, which is great because it is can be competitive and there's, you know, luck involved. People need to be looking for your skill set and places that you want to go. So that was awesome as well. And I love teaching environmental science and geography courses. It's what I'm really interested in. And I love also doing the research and working with graduate students and mentoring them through their research projects. So that's a really awesome part of the job. In terms of what students are interested in, a lot of students are interested in freshwater ecosystems, but the plastic topic, people are super interested in plastic waste. And I think they just understand it. It's not that hard a concept right now. I mean, it's getting more technical because we're talking about different plastic polymers and everything like that. But people, you know, can just see how much plastic we're using, you know, and they can see the plastic waste. So it's quite, the basics of it are quite easy for people to understand. And the public, so the students are definitely interested in that topic. And then the public at large is really, really interested in that topic. So I get asked to talk a lot more about plastic pollution, even though it's a relatively new part of my research program, than I do about algae, for example. So, you know, there's a few students who are interested in algae. It's a bit more of a niche interest, but there's broad interest, I'd say, in the topic around plastic pollution.
Awesome. In terms of like looking at the human impacts, I don't know if you can maybe share your perspective on like an individual scale versus more of like a national scale. Like, what do you think is probably the biggest barrier when it comes to human impacts? And do you think there are certain individual action items that people should be taking to kind of help the problem?
Yeah. So the problem of plastic pollution or just...
On a broader sense, but yeah, even more if you want to get a little bit more focus on plastic as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of freshwater ecosystems, which I know better, I mean, the biggest human impact is climate change, because it's so broad and it's so, climate plays such a big role in every different ecosystem I can pretty well think of. And it's having a big effect on a lot of lake systems, and especially up north where I do some of my research, the changes are really obvious. So that's basically, I think climate change is sort of the biggest problem that we have to tackle and understand, you know, basically what can we do to sort of limit the climate changes and mitigate any impacts that might happen on aquatic ecosystems. And that one's the most challenging, but plastic pollution, I think, is has similar challenges to climate change. And I mean, the two are linked, and we're also sort of just starting really to understand how widespread like microplastic pollution is. So again, it's one of those problems that's hard to sort of control because it's so diffuse, it's spread throughout the environment, and once the plastic is released into the environment, it's really hard to clean up and control. It's still, I think, unclear exactly what the impact of plastic is in a lot of different environments. I mean, we know it's there, and that might be, and it's undesirable that it's there, so that might be enough reason to want to clean it up. But it's definitely an issue that needs to be tackled. What I do find interesting about the problem of plastic pollution is, at least in, well, I'd say a lot of different governments, but in Canada, the government's taking action on it really quickly compared to a lot of other environmental problems. So they're almost ahead of the the research in their policy development in a lot of cases, which is just really interesting from a case study of environmental problems. Usually it takes decades and decades of data saying, you know, this is a problem, we need to do something about it before action's taken. And in plastics, it's almost, it's been relatively quick, I think, that governments are taking action to sort of at least, you know, start to reduce certain plastics and trying to put monitoring programs in place to monitor plastic pollution. So that's pretty interesting to me, is just how quickly policies moved on plastic pollution compared to other environmental problems like, you know, climate change, where things do move forward a bit and then backwards a bit and then forwards a bit, but it's just seems to be a harder problem to get consensus around, unfortunately.
Yeah, and to kind of even build on what you were saying before about how plastic pollution is just so easy to comprehend and you can just understand it. So like for someone who really is like not even clued into climate change, it's very easy to understand that like my waste that I create from like packaging, whatever, like that plastic goes directly to the environment if there's no home for it to be recycled and whatnot. So like it is interesting to see how that's translated now into government policy as well, where something broader like climate change, not that it's not as, it's a little bit more complicated to understand to see the full scope of its impact, but plastics is just easier to comprehend. So maybe that's also a reason why the government's been able to move quickly on it, just because they've reached more consensus. And kind of just to build on all those topics you mentioned before too, where do you tend to research and learn a lot on these topics? Like obviously you're a professor and you know you have to do your due diligence. And where do you recommend your students if they want to learn more on whether it's the algae or plastic pollution? What kind of resources, maybe like books or podcasts or anything like
documentaries.
That?
Documentaries.
Yeah.
Well, so in Ottawa, I work with like the Ottawa Riverkeeper, which is an NGO on like plastic in the Ottawa River. And they're a great organization, you know, a somewhat local focus of the Ottawa River watershed. But they're a super great organization at getting people involved with activities and raising awareness about the health of the Ottawa River. And I have worked with and would like to do more work with like an NGO in Honduras who's looking at some of their islands and plastic pollution there, and mainly the island of Roatan. So that's something I hope to sort of continue to do in the future, is sort of work with that NGO and look more a bit more globally at the problems of plastic pollution. And then I don't know them personally and that, but I really respect the work they've done as the Five Gyres Institute. So they've done a ton, I think, to raise awareness about the issue of plastic pollution. And they were nice. And like our first study, we borrowed a manta trawl net from them. They lent us one. So it's the nets that float on the surface of the water and let you sample the pollution. So I think they're really at, you know, the forefront of this problem of raising awareness about plastic pollution in marine environments and globally in general.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to kind of touch on too, is like, since you've started this whole journey, like you said, obviously there's no clear cut plan. It just kind of rolled into your interest, started from biology. Now you worked your way up to kind of being this professor and more of an expert on these topics. What have you found to be the most enjoyable, whether that's just focusing on the topic itself, or maybe it's your interaction with students and kind of inspiring those to take action? Like, I know you probably have students with all different majors that you're working with as well. And what has just been mostly kind of the satisfying, enjoyable aspect from your climate change or sustainable advocacy and role there?
Yeah, so the most enjoyable for me is, I think, working with students and especially students on research projects. So senior undergrad students that you get to know, like they might be doing a year-long project with you in their fourth year, for example. So you get to know them better in that, and that's really fun. And then grad students, same thing, if you're doing your master's or PhD and working with them, just because you get to interact with them more and you know, learn more about them. But working with students, I think, and conducting research with in partnership with students is the most rewarding part because it's a lot more fun, you know, working with people. I couldn't imagine doing research just by myself, you know, alone for years and years on end. Like I that wouldn't be that interesting to me necessarily. It's actually working with the people and you know, sharing ideas and watching them, you know, develop their skills at different levels. That's definitely the most rewarding. And then also I like working with community groups and in a lot of my research. So whether that is like the Ottawa Riverkeeper, like I said, or lake associations, I just find it really interesting to do sort of applied research in that way as well. And working with different community groups, again, because it feels like you're doing your research like less in a vacuum. Like people are interested in it and they want to know the findings and they want you to come and, you know, talk to their lake association. And that's rewarding as well, rather than, you know, it's rewarding publishing your research in scientific papers as well, but that's a bit more closed a lot of the time and you don't get a lot of interaction with people through that process. Just the reviewers on your manuscripts, which can be, you know, good or negative experiences depending on the reviews. So it's definitely working with students at different levels and the public, and through research I find much more interesting than say just like lecturing, for example.
Yeah, definitely that community aspect. You want to have that human interaction, I think, for like meant to connect with other people. So it's cool that you get to do that with your students and then also the community. I guess kind of also now just kind of wrapping things up here. Is there one specific takeaway that you would like to leave with the listeners, whether that's like a stat or something cool from your research or just like an overall kind of like key takeaway that you think?
Even a story, like anything you want to share, just kind of like your last punch on. It could be algae focused, plastic focused, your call.
Whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, I'd say maybe I'll keep it plastic focused, I guess, but, or yeah. So I, you know, I think humans are just having a really big impact on the planet now, both could be both positive or negative, maybe in different aspects. But it's important that we realize that and, you know, our actions do have consequences and sometimes really long-term consequences. And we need science essentially in a lot of cases to sort of help mitigate those impacts and do the best we can. And, you know, and it's not always necessarily good news, but part of solving a problem is figuring out what the problem is, you know, and some people can find that depressing maybe sometimes if you're always talking about environmental problems, but really the first step I think to solving a problem is you need to identify that there's a problem there and what it is, and then you can work on trying to fix it. So I think that's really important. And there's been, you know, there was just a study published in Nature, for example, so a scientific paper that showed that human built things now outweigh, you know, roughly around now outweigh all living things, so the dry mass of living things, and that there's more almost twice as much plastic in the environment than there is the dry weight of animals, for example. So, you know, our actions are having a big impact on the planet, and we need to basically acknowledge that and take responsibility for that, I think, to sort of limit the damage.
Awesome. Yeah, great quote. Like, that was just a well side thing.
And, yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. If you would like to learn more, visit us at www.last20.ca. Until next time, stay sustainable.